Chapter 34. Promised Messer Gaudier de Mani that we would give ourselves up as ransom for the place. And we came before our Lord King Edward, attired as you see, and the fair queen begged our lives out of her gramercy. Queen, nonsense, you mean the Princess of Wales' pretty woman, petit Nesretroes, grew monstrous stout, suggested Mr. Brummel, whose reading was evidently not extensive. Sidney Smith was a fine fellow, great talker, hook nose, so as Lord Cochrane, so as Lord Wellington. She was very sweet on Sir Sidney. Your acquaintance with the history of Calais does not seem to be considerable, said Mr. Stern to Mr. Brummel, with a shrug. Don't it, Bishop? For I conclude you are a bishop by your wig. I know Calais as well as any man. I lived here 4 years, before I took that confounded consulate at Keene. Lived in this hotel, then at Lelou's. People used to stop here. Good fellows used to ask for poor George Brummel. Hartford did, so did the Duchess of Devonshire. Not know Calais indeed. That is a good joke. Had many a good dinner here. Sorry I ever left it. My Lord King Edward, chirped the queer old gentleman in the shirt. Colonized the place with his English, after we had yielded it up to him. I have heard tell they kept it for nigh 300 years, till my lord de Guise took it from a fair queen, Mary of blessed memory, a holy woman. Eh, but Sire Gaudier of Mani was a good knight, a valiant captain, gentle and courteous withal. Do you remember his ransoming the, what is the old fellow twaddling about? Cries Brummel. He is talking about some knight? I never spoke to a knight, and very seldom to a baronet. Firkins, my butterman, was a knight and alderman. Wales knighted him once on going into the city. I am not surprised that the gentleman should not understand Messer Eustace of St. Peter's, said the ghostly individual addressed as Mr. Stern. Our reading doubtless has not been very extensive? Damme, sir, speak for yourself. Cries Mr. Brummel, testily. Never professed to be a reading man, but I was as good as my neighbors. Wales wasn't a reading man. York wasn't a reading man. Clarence wasn't a reading man. Sussex was, but he wasn't a man in society. I remember reading your sentimental journey, apostrophe old boy. Read it to the Duchess at Beauvoir, I recollect, and she cried over it. Deuced clever amusing book, and does you great credit. Byron wrote deuced clever books too, so did Monk Lewis. George Spencer was an elegant poet, and my dear Duchess of Devonshire, if as he had not been a grand dame, would have beat them all, by George. Wales couldn't write. He could sing, but he couldn't spell. Ah, you know the great world, so did I in my time, Mr. Brummel. I have had the visiting tickets of half the nobility at my lodgings in Bond Street. But they left me there no more cared for than last year's calendar, sighed Mr. Stern. Wonder who is the mode in London now? One of our late arrivals, my Lord Macaulay, has prodigious merit and learning, and, faith, his histories are more amusing than any novels, my own included. Don't know, I'm sure not in my line. Pick this bone of chicken, says Mr. Brummel, trifling with a skeleton bird before him. I remember in this city of Calais worse fare than you bird, said old Mr. Eustace of St. Peter's. Airy, sirs, when my lord King Edward laid siege to us, lucky was he who could get a slice of horse for his breakfast, and a rat was sold at the price of a hare. Hare is coarse food, never tasted rat, remarked the beau. Able don't poor fare enough for a man like me, who has been accustomed to the best of cookery. But rat stifle me. I couldn't swallow that. Never could bear hardship at all. We had to bear enough, when my Lord of England pressed us. 'Twas pitiful to see the faces of our women as the siege went on, and hear the little ones asking for dinner. Always a bore, children. At dessert, they are bad enough, but at dinner they're the deuce and all, remarked Mr. Brummel. Messer Eustace of St. Peter's did not seem to pay much attention to the beau's remarks, but continued his own train of thought as old men will do. I hear, said he, that there has actually been no war between us of France and you men of England for well nigh 50 years. Ours has ever been a nation of warriors. And besides irregular found men-at-arms, 'tis said the English of the present time have more than 100,000 of archers with weapons that will carry for half a mile. And a multitude have come amongst us of late from a great western country, never so much as heard of in my time valiant men, and great drawers of the long bow, and they say they have ships in armor that no shot can penetrate. Is it so? Wonderful, wonderful. The best armor, gossips, is a stout heart. And if ever manly heart beat under shirt frill, thine is that heart, Sir Eustace, cried Mr. Stern, enthusiastically. We, of France, were never accused of lack of courage, sir, in so far as I know, said Messer Eustace. Ye have shown as much in 1,000 wars with you English by sea and land, and sometimes we conquered, and sometimes, as is the fortune of war, we were discomfited. And notably in a great sea fight which befell off Ushant on the 1st of June, our admiral, Messer Villaret de Joyeuse, on board his galleon named the Venture, apostrophe being sore pressed by an English bombard, rather than yield the crew of his ship to mercy, determined to go down with all on board of her. And to the cry of Vive la Republique, or, I would say, of Notre Dame et la Rescousse, he and his crew all sank to an immortal grave, sir, said I, looking with amazement at the old gentleman. Surely, surely, there is some mistake in your statement. Permit me to observe that the action of the 1st of June took place 500 years after your time, and, perhaps I am confusing my dates, said the old gentleman, with a faint blush. Who say I am mixing up the transactions of my time on earth with the story of my successors? It may be so. We take no count of a few centuries more or less in our dwelling by the darkling Stygian River. Of late, there came amongst us a good knight, Messer de Cambron, who fought against the English in the country of Flanders, being captain of the guard of my lord the King of France, in a famous battle, where you English would have been utterly routed, but for the succor of the Prussian heathen. This Messer de Cambron, when bidden to yield by you of England, answered this, the guard dies but never surrenders, apostrophe and fought a long time afterwards, as became a good knight. In our wars with you of England it may have pleased the fates to give you the greater success, but on our side, also, there has been no lack of brave deeds performed by brave men. King Edward may have been the victor, sir, as being the strongest, but you are the hero of the siege of Calais, cried Mr. Stern. Your story is sacred, and your name has been blessed for 500 years. Wherever men speak of patriotism and sacrifice, Eustace of St. Pierre shall be beloved and remembered. I prostrate myself before the bare feet which stood before King Edward. What collar of chivalry is to be compared to that glorious order which you wear? Think, sir, how out of the myriad millions of our race, you, and some few more, stand forth as exemplars of duty and honor. Fortunate Inimium! Sir, said the old gentleman, I did but my duty at a painful moment, and 'tis matter of wonder to me that men talk still, and glorify such a trifling matter. By Our Lady's grace, in the fair kingdom of France, there are scores of thousands of men, gentle and simple, who would do as I did. Does not every sentinel at his post, does not every archer in the front of battle, brave it, and die where his captain bids him? Who am I, that I should be chosen out of all France, to be an example of fortitude? I braved no tortures, though these I trust I would have endured with a good heart. I was subject to threats only. Who was the Roman knight of whom the Latin clerk Horatius tells? A Latin clerk? Faith, I forget my Latin, says Mr. Brummel. S.K. the parson, here. Messer Regulus, I remember, was his name. Taken prisoner by the Saracens, he gave his knightly word, and was permitted to go seek a ransom among his own people. Being unable to raise the sum that was a fitting ransom for such a knight, he returned to Afric, and cheerfully submitted to the tortures which the Paynims inflicted. And it said he took leave of his friends as gaily as though he were going to a village Kerms, or riding to his garden house in the suburb of the city. Great, good, glorious man! Cried Mr. Stern, very much moved. Let me embrace that gallant hand, and bedew it with my tears. As long as honor lasts, thy name shall be remembered. See this dewdrop twinkling on my cheek. 'Tis the sparkling tribute that sensibility pays to valor. Though in my life and practice I may turn from virtue, believe me, I never have ceased to honor her. Ah, virtue! Ah, sensibility! Oh, here Mr. Stern was interrupted by a monk of the Order of St. Francis, who stepped into the room, and begged us all to take a pinch of his famous old rappee. I suppose the snuff was very pungent, for, with a great start, I woke up, and now perceived, that I must have been dreaming altogether. Essains of nowadays is not the essains which Mr. Stern, and Mr. Brummel, and I recollect in the good old times. The town of Calais has bought the old hotel, and Essain has gone over to Ulick's. And I was there yesterday. And I remember old diligences, and old postilions in pigtails and jackboots, who were once as alive as I am, and whose cracking whips I have heard in the midnight many and many a time. Now, where are they? Behold, they have been ferried over Styx, and have passed away into limbo. I wonder what time does my boat go? Ah! Here comes the waiter bringing me my little bill. On some carpet sand sousy. We have lately made the acquaintance of an old lady of 90, who has passed the last 25 years of her old life in a great metropolitan establishment, the workhouse, namely, of the parish of St. Lazarus. Stay 23 or 24 years ago, she came out once, and thought to earn a little money by hop-picking, but being overworked, and having to lie out at night, she got a palsy which has incapacitated her from all further labor, and has caused her poor old limbs to shake ever since. An illustration of that dismal proverb which tells us, how poverty makes us acquainted with strange bedfellows, this poor old shaking body has to lay herself down every night in her workhouse bed by the side of some other old woman with whom she may or may not agree. She herself can't be a very pleasant bedfellow, poor thing, with her shaking old limbs and cold feet. She lies awake a deal of the night, to be sure, not thinking of happy old times, for hers never were happy, but sleepless with aches, and agues, and rheumatism of old age. He gentleman gave me brandy and water, she said, her old voice shaking with rapture at the thought. I never had a great love for Queen Charlotte, but I like her better now from what this old lady told me. The Queen, who loved snuff herself, has left a legacy of snuff to certain poorhouses. And, in her watchful nights, this old woman takes a pinch of Queen Charlotte's snuff, and it do comfort me, sir, that it do. Pulvis exigu immunis. Here is a forlorn aged creature, shaking with palsy, with no soul among the great struggling multitude of mankind to care for her, not quite trampled out of life, but past and forgotten in the rush, made a little happy, and soothed in her hours of unrest by this penny legacy. Let me think as I write. The next month's sermon, thank goodness, is safe to press. This discourse will appear at the season, when I have read that wassail bowls make their appearance, at the season of pantomime, turkey and sausages, plum puddings, jollifications for schoolboys, Christmas bills, and reminiscences more or less sad and sweet for elders. If we oldsters are not merry, we shall be having a semblance of merriment. We shall see the young folks laughing round the holly bush. We shall pass the bottle round cozily as we sit by the fire. That old thing will have a sort of festival too. Beef, beer, and pudding will be served to her for that day also. Christmas falls on a Thursday. Friday is the workhouse day for coming out. Mary, remember that old Goody Twashows has her invitation for Friday, 26th December. 90 is she, poor old soul? Ah! What a bonny face to catch under a mistletoe. S, 90, sir, she says, and my mother was 100, and my grandmother was 102. herself 90, her mother 100, her grandmother 102? What a queer calculation. 90. Very good, Granny. You were born, then, in 1772. Your mother, we will say, was 27 when you were born, and was born therefore in 1745. Your grandmother was 30 when her daughter was born, and was born therefore in 1705. We will begin with the present Granny first. My good old creature, you can't of course remember, but that little gentleman for whom your mother was laundress in the temple was the ingenious Mr. Goldsmith, author of A History of England, The Iker of Wakefield, and many diverting pieces. You were brought almost an infant to his chambers in Brick Court, and he gave you some sugar candy, for the doctor was always good to children. That gentleman who well nigh smothered you, by sitting down on you as you lay in a chair asleep, was the learned Mr. S. Johnson, whose History of Rasselas you have never read, my poor soul, and whose Tragedy of Irene I don't believe any man in these kingdoms ever perused. That tipsy Scotch gentleman who used to come to the chambers sometimes, and at whom everybody laughed, wrote a more amusing book than any of the scholars, your Mr. Burke and your Mr. Johnson, and your Dr. Goldsmith. Your father often took him home in a chair to his lodgings, and has done as much for Parson Stern in Bond Street, the famous wit. Of course, my good creature, you remember the Gordon riots, and crying no popery before Mr. Langdale's house, the Popish distillers, and that bonfire of my Lord Mansfield's books in Bloomsbury Square? Bless us, what a heap of illuminations you have seen! For the glorious victory over the Americans at Breed's Hill, for the peace in 1814, and the beautiful Chinese bridge in St. James Park, for the coronation of His Majesty, whom you recollect as Prince of Wales, goody, don't you? Yes, and you went in a procession of laundresses, to pay your respects to his good lady, the injured Queen of England, at Brandenburg House, and you remember your mother told you, how she was taken to see the Scotch lords executed at the Tower. And as for your grandmother, she was born 5 years after the Battle of Malplaquet, she was, where her poor father was killed, fighting like a bold Briton for the Queen. With the help of a aide's chronology, I can make out ever so queer a history for you, my poor old body, and a pedigree as authentic as many in the peerage books. Peerage books and pedigrees? What does she know about them? Battles and victories, treasons, kings, and beheadings, literary gentlemen, and the like, what have they ever been to her? Granny, did you ever hear of General Wolfe? Your mother may have seen him embark, and your father may have carried a musket under him. Your grandmother may have cried huzzah for Marlborough, but what is the Prince Duke to you, and did you ever, so much as hear tell of his name? How many hundred or thousand of years had that toad lived who was in the coal at the defunct exhibition? And yet he was not a bit better informed than toad 700 or 800 years younger. Don't talk to me your nonsense about exhibitions, and Prince Dukes, and toads in coals, or coals in toads, or what is it? Says Granny. I know there was a good Queen Charlotte, for she left me snuff, and it comforts me of a night when I lie awake. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.